So today we have back on the podcast Jeffrey Verity Schofield and Alex Leonidas. How are we doing, guys?
Very good. Yourself?
Doing well, man. So our last roundtable we had together, I think that might have been my most popular podcast to date, actually. A lot of great feedback on that. So definitely want to get you guys back on. Alex, I saw recently that you just hit a 315 incline. So first, congrats on that. Very impressive.
Thank you very much.
And I saw somewhat recently you hit a 405 flat. And I'm just thinking of my own numbers and like how they are proportionally. And I would say, and again, I don't do both of them at the same time as much anymore, but I would say proportionally, it seems like your flat is a little stronger and more impressive. Obviously, 315 incline is amazing, but would you agree with that?
Way stronger. And that's because I didn't do incline pressing for years. And I
Okay.
also have a condition, hypermobile elbows. And it affects me mostly on inclines. So what happens is, I'm not going to demonstrate it here in case the viewers, or I could, but my arm extends beyond normal range of motion, right? And when I'm in that incline angle, it creates a moment arm that's so large that I have difficulties locking it out. And in general, the leverages feel a little bit off. So that's why I kind of avoided them for years. But at some point, I was like, you know what? I suck at this lift. I just gotta go hard on it and stop making excuses. So I did that and managed to get three plates, which I'm very happy with, but I know it's nowhere near my flat. So there's specificity and then my actual build to consider as well. But I think most people are a bit closer, not a 100-pound gap.
And what is your best overhead press to date?
I did 242 on the seated version.
And that I'd say false because I'm trying to think of mine. I had done 225 for two was my best. It was kind of weird. I was ramping up to do 225, and then in that cycle, I was able to hit it for two. And I should have just said, okay, now what can I get for one? But I was kind of just done with it. So,
Yeah, he probably would have gone like 232, something like that. But
that's.
that's two plates for one is already impressive. So to get for a double when you weren't expecting it during a peak state, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was good. And I was a little bit heavier. And I was saying before we started, you're looking pretty meaty. How heavy are you now?
I'm 193 right now. So
Oh, wow. That's pretty big for you, right?
yeah, I've been bulking since December, no main gaining to get these muscle gains.
No, that's awesome. And Jeff, you're always, first I'll ask Alex, is that an all-time high for you, 193?
No, I've been a little bit heavier.
What's the heaviest you've been?
Ooh, well, if we're talking about a maximum bloated state, I once woke up at 200, but that's not actual fat. So re realistically, hover around 195, but that was a few weeks ago.
And you're 5'6"?
Yeah, five, five and a half, five, six, whatever.
So that's a lot for that
Yeah,
height.
thank you, man.
And Jeff, you're 220-ish?
Yeah, like 218 to 220. I've just been sort of hovering around 218 to 220. Just main gaining along and recomping and taking a
Yeah, it's that I've mentioned before, the heaviest I've been was 220, and it was definitely, I hadn't been home in a long time, and so when I came home, it was definitely like, oh damn, like you've gotten a lot heavier and plenty of fat for sure. This is not like a shredded 220 by any means. But and I mentioned we'll talk about the big genetics video I made recently, but one of the things I've said is I'm not a big fan of main gaining or gaintaining, whatever you want to call it. Not to say that it's not worth doing at an advanced stage. I more just mean I see so many, especially, I mean, ridiculous, I think, for beginners, but even intermediates where they're like, okay, I'm going to stay at this weight for so long. And they just dramatically slow their process. And the example I had given was that I was probably 15 pounds less muscular at the time. And I tried that approach for months and months, and I literally didn't go anywhere. And obviously, I wasn't maxed out, right? I just think, and it's like somebody could say, well, how do you explain that physiologically? Or like, why would you need to hold on to the muscle longer? And I don't have a great explanation for why, but it just seems to be that the longer you hold on to it and the more you push things, the more progress you're going to make, within re reasonable realms.
It's I think the body just senses energy availability pretty well, and it's just interested in survival. And so if you're like even just transitionally in this sort of deficit state, it can sense that really, really well. And I think main gaining can work if you're like 20% or so, but yeah, like 14, 15%, because most people don't realize how lean 14% is. It's actually pretty lean. Right? Like people think I'm 14%. No, I'm like 19% or so. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, but like you have a biceps vein or something like that. And like their idea of what leanness is like 5-7% off in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's going to be some studies that come out, but I think just looking at old school bodybuilders, they bulked, and all of them bulked. Like none of them were maintaining like a lean look year round, and certainly not like today's social media standards.
Mm.
And so I think there are definitely some clues as to what those guys did. And almost all of them, they described it like a softening kind of state, to where they would purposefully gain weight, not just purposefully gain muscle. They would gain weight, overall weight. And a lot of them were pretty aggressive with it too, because I mean, relatively speaking, fat loss is just easier and faster compared to muscle growth. So I think it just makes the most sense to try to optimize, there's that word, right? Optimize muscle growth when you can, and just accept a little bit of fat gain, or even like a visible amount of fat gain, and then just cut it off later. So, you know, spend 70-80% of the time in a, not an aggressive surplus, you know, be reasonable with it, but like a noticeable and progressive surplus where you're pushing your body weight up. I think that is going to work better for pretty much everyone. And I see guys who are, man, they just have it bad from social media, and they're just trying to maintain a look where they will never ever get the amount of muscle that they need to actually have the look that they want, because they want the leanness all the freaking time.
Yeah,
many times those people become content creators in the sense that they're not improving their own physique, but they're making extravagant videos where they look good, you know? So it's informative and it's a nice display, but in terms of making gains, nothing's going on, and it'll often last for years until they go through a bulk. And next thing you know, this long-term plateau was obliterated. And the way I see it, all the best natties from the bronze and silver era to now have all gone through bulks. And what always amazes me is when some of them hit a super elite level of muscle mass and strength, and then they stop bulking and cutting, and then they tell their audience to do the same thing, that, oh, I could have gotten to the same spot mm-hmm. had I not bulked. And yeah. I look at that like, you're contradicting yourself. That's like me saying I didn't benefit from bear mode. Of course I did. And like Jeff said, most people are many points off in terms of estimating their own body fat percentage. People say 20 are about 25. 12%, you're probably around 16. You know, this obsession with leanness, I see it all the time in my comment section. And sometimes people will post a routine and I'm looking at it and I have to question, why are you not making gains? And then I see their diet right after. That's the problem. Yeah. And if people just did that, you know, sometimes the advice can be train hard and eat like a madman. A lot of these problems would go away. And people understood that back in the day. Now the newer generation just wants to be shredded all the time. It doesn't help with all these SARMs goblins and people showcasing a shredded physique year round.
It's a lot of points on that. So I know, Jeff, you were not on the T Nation forums. Alex, were you ever on them?
I used to read some of the articles, but I wasn't on the forums directly.
Okay. So there was a guy pretty prolifically on there, Professor X. And he big black dude. He was actually a dentist too, actually. And somebody will comment like, oh, like you're the most jacked dentist I know. I'm like, I got a way more jacked dentist. and big guy. So he would talk about bulking up and holding on to the weight. And it's funny because, so he would talk about it. And if you guys know Shelby Starnes, kind of infamous coach now, but he said that he did not believe that. He's like, you know, there's no reason why you'd have to hold on to the muscle. It's the same muscle either way. And then he later, like a year or two later, came around and said, actually, now my experience is it is better to hold on. And I just saw Eric Trexler and Greg Knuckles on the Stronger by Science podcast talk about how they were saying they don't think there's any difference and you don't need to hold on to it. And as we're all discussing here, that's not my experience. That's not a lot of people's experience. And again, I couldn't explain to you. I know actually Cody Hahn had a paper out recently on, I believe it was how it seemed like, you know, it was like sarcoplasmic versus myofibrillar hypertrophy. And maybe it almost like converting over time. I'd have to go back. And this was a couple of years ago now. But I couldn't sit here and tell you exactly physiologically why it's different. but it does seem to be more and more. I just think that you have to hold on to it to some extent. And I like, you know, Jeff, you were saying how it's not like you're just super aggressively bulking up, but you are taking the time to do it. And this is why I still use the words bulk and cut, because for a while people, like, I'm not going to change my terminology because of people's misinterpretation of it. And so sometimes people would say, well, oh, like bulking up is such a bad idea. What are you just eating pizza and gaining 20 pounds in a month? And it's like, to me, bulking just means you are gaining weight over time. That's it.
Yeah.
You could take a year to gain 10 pounds. You're just doing a slower bulk. It, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean dirty bulk or any of that stuff. It's just gaining weight, and cutting is just losing the fat, right? I always just found that frustrating that people would assume that when you say bulk, you mean you got to get super sloppy in a short amount of time.
Yeah, it makes for a good strawman argument. And sometimes when you go through a bulk, there will be a couple of weeks where your weight maintains, but then your hunger starts to ramp up, you train harder, and then boom, you shoot past another 5 pounds. So it's about the long-term journey. Like, just been bulking for what, over a year now? For me, yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It's been, I did a mini cut. I did like a quick 2 month mini cut from like last bulk down in like February, March, April. I tore my QL and I was like, well, I can't train lower body at all. So like, I'm just going to cut. So I cut down pretty quick for 2 months, dropped like 8 kilos. And then, you know, I just went back up. So I try to spend as much time bulking, and I try not to go below like 12% or so. That's about where I got last time. And then I try to spend as much time just building. And you're right, at the end of a bulk, or like near the top part of a bulk, it'll be effort and work to try to keep that body weight. Like, you'll find your body weight like slips down if you just don't eat and like not stuff your face, but like if you're not focused on it, you will lose weight, but you won't be losing muscle from that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it'll be effortless fat loss. And this is where you can lose fat super quickly if you want, or you can like recomp slowly, like natural hypertrophy style, or you can continue to bulk very, very slowly. So that's where main gaining actually works, but only when you're in this fed state and your body's like, we have all the energy we want, we can give it away super easily. And essentially you're in a surplus without actually being in a surplus, because your body is like, we don't want this much fat. We're just going to get rid of it. And so it's just releasing all this fat, and your body's like, well, we have all this. And it essentially feels like it's in a surplus, even if you're not actually taking in more calories. And so it's basically just free money, and you can just chill at the top of a bulk and basically go in whatever direction you want, and everything seems to work out. But if you try to do that at the end of a cut, you're like, oh, I've reached my dream physique and I'm 8% body fat. And you're like, I guess I'll like try to make it. Just does not work. Like, you can't go any lower. You can't tread water. Like, you can't even go up slightly, because then if you start to bulk, you just get super hungry because you're too lean. And so, you know, when I see these guys, and then they think they have bad genetics because they're trying to maintain these shredded physiques. It's not the genetics. It's the choices and the influences from, you know, people who maybe are more naturally lean or are enhanced and are not, you know, open about it. And so a lot of people don't realize life at 8% and life at 18%, totally different situation. Yeah. And, you know, just in terms of energy availability, and then the choices that you have in terms of what you want your body weight to do.
I think it goes down to how effortless it is. When you're in a bulk state, you can screw up quite a bit on a day-to-day basis. Like, your calories don't have to be perfect. Whereas if you're shredded and you miss those meals, or you don't sleep enough, or you do a little bit too much volume, you're going to be feeling it the next day or next workout. And it just goes to show that your maintenance weight, when fluffy, it's different. Like, you can do so much more, and even, you know, lose fat for a couple of weeks, continue to max out. If you're doing that, continue running an aggressive powerlifting program. You know, you can maintain your peak for a while before you start to see regression. But if you even attempt to do that when you're at the end of a cut, it won't last long at all.
So a couple points there. One is, with Jeff, you were saying, like, when you're done bulking up and you first diet down, that's such an easy period, right? Because like, you can just stop force feeding yourself. You're still maintaining strength, and you said it's almost like you're still in a surplus. And kind of like the opposite of that, when you are dieting, if you're dieting aggressively, when you reverse out, sometimes these people who are doing like super slow reverses, you're still in a deficit, right? Because you're just in less of a deficit. And I've always said, to me, the best times of the year when I was doing bigger bulks and cuts was either when you first start dieting, right? Because everything is still like so easy there and you're losing all this fat. Or when you reverse out of a, like you're done a diet because you're really lean, right? You're hungry, like you can get to eat more food, but you're still looking really good. And you know, there's that whole like whoosh, long-term delayed fat loss effect Lyle McDonald will talk about, where even though you're adding calories, you actually sometimes will drop, especially if you're like me, you hold a lot of water, you actually drop. So those periods are nice. And I don't know how much actual recomping is going on, but visually things will look a lot nicer because you're dropping below and things like that.
Yeah, I like how you, when you reverse diet your way out, you're still in a deficit. That is so true. So if your maintenance was 2,500 and you diet it down to 1,800 to get shredded, then you're like, okay, I'm going to bump it up to 2,000 and I feel so much better. Well, you're still 500 calories below maintenance. And then, okay, let's try 2,200. You're still in the deficit. That means for the next few weeks, you're still not in your best state.
Yep. And the other thing I was going to point out with that we all inherently know is the difference when trying to live at, let's say, an 8 versus 18%. It never ceases to amaze me how dramatic that difference can be. And obviously some people, it's different. Like, you know, Steve Hall seems to always walk around relatively lean, right? More than most people. But whatever that baseline is for you, for me, I would say and I have like some examples of this too, when I've gone on vacation. So like, if I'm trying to get down to like a legitimate 10% body fat, not all, like so much more of your just daily thoughts are around food. And I've been on a number of cruises and it's basically all you can eat all day, right? And I've done that dieted, which is not the best idea. And I have literally gained, like when I've taken it to the extreme, gained 5 to 10 pounds of actual fat in a week, meaning like I came back, lost the bloat, and I was still 5 to 10 pounds heavier. Like, I mean, this was like just gorging myself up. This is like much younger, not the best relationship with food, and not a good plan. And I've also gone on cruises where this past summer, I was probably eating about 5,000 calories a day for a week, obviously gained weight, but I wouldn't say I was bulked up, but I was just kind of in my normal state. Within 1 week of getting back to just, you know, 2,000 calories for a week, a little damage control, I was back to my normal weight. Like, there's, first of all, your hunger is less, right? So that, I think people talk about differences in metabolism, and we kind of know, yes, there are differences in metabolism, but two of the biggest determinants are also like your NEAT, right? And how you respond to surpluses, but also hunger. You know, it's very common that people with a higher appetite obviously think they're eating less, and then vice versa. And so just to eat, quote unquote, whatever you want when bulked up is so different than eating whatever you want when dieted down, right? It's just your whole life is just different in those states.
Yeah. I'll experience the same thing for sure. Like, your body will force you. I think it's called like the dual intervention model, where it's like, if you're too high or too low, your body will like force you. And I find that it's around 15 to 16%. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fairly common number. It'll obviously vary from individual to individual. For some people, like if they go above 13%, they start like losing their appetite. And I can maintain 12 or 13%, but I can tell that it's not quite the same as like 15 or 16%. Like, I'll get a little bit more hungry, you know, portion sizes will creep up a little bit, and I'll just feel that push, that invisible hand of the marketplace just pushing me towards 15, 16%. If I go above that, like, I'll start losing my appetite and I'll get pushed back down. But I still don't think trying to maintain 15% and main gaining is going to be the best way to go, even if I feel perfect at 15%. And I think that's the trap that some people fall into. They feel perfect, and yet just physiologically, they're not really in the correct state to build muscle. And I can even feel okay at 12%, but it's not going to be anywhere the same as like pushing things up to 18, 19, 20%. And I think past a certain point, you actually get like a negative effect of bulking, like maybe through partitioning or insulin sensitivity or something. But past a certain point, it's almost like the bulk doesn't help you anymore. I think that's where bulking gets a bad reputation, where people go beyond 22, 20, like somewhere in that low 20s, it seems, for most guys. I think that's where bulking gets a bad reputation. And I think going beyond that is really only going to be possible with low quality food anyway, which is why it's called a dirty bulk typically. Like, it's partly the body fat percentage, but partly the food quality. And those two sort of go hand in hand, because you can't get like to 30% body fat eating mostly like whole natural foods for most people. Mm-hmm. It's when you put in like the super palatable, high energy density kind of stuff where things can really like Jeff Seed. I would say he's naturally lean. He got, he got sloppy for sure. What did he want to 220 or 230? Or he went up,
I think,
pretty high.
It was at least like 230. Yeah.
All I know is he had a double chin. So,
yeah. I will say though, with Jeff, and I totally agree with all of your points. In Jeff's case, I just looking at the video that, who was it, Doucette, that put out a video on it?
A lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people. But I do feel like you were looking at the worst angles and things like that. Like, I feel like that same Jeff side could take a pumped picture in good lighting and it would just look like most of us bulked up.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought he looked fine, actually, apart from like the double chin. But like, mm-hmm. if he cut carbs and cut salt for a week, he'd be fine, I think.
Yeah, I think if you just put some down lighting and filmed from a top-down angle, he'd look amazing. But yeah, Jeff pointed out some good points just now. So getting to 30% body fat pretty much requires you to eat garbage food unless you have a really massive appetite. But for most lifters that I've seen, they tend to hover around 15 to 20%. That seems to be a very manageable range when you're eating reasonably good food at a rate that you want, right? The only exception for that is if you do something like GOMAD, you know, and you gain 10 pounds or more in a month. But what happens when you stop drinking all that milk? You cut immediately, just similar to what you described with your cruise experience. So it's not a natural state for you to be in.
Yeah, for sure. I have one acquaintance who, like, I'm not going to say people can't maintain very lean levels all the time, but he's probably around 10% most of the year. And he grew up as a fat kid, but he's very obsessive. And it's the point where it's like, man, I can appreciate what you're doing, but it seems like it's just not what I would want to do. I mean, literally, so he will have like three low days and then a high day, and he'll just kind of rotate through that. But everything is about the food. Like, he literally like studies the science of food to try to find the most filling, low calorie density food. And it's just the same thing all the time. And he has, like, if you've heard of like Puffed Kamut, it's like the cereal that's very voluminous but low calorie. And
right.
He has that every meal. And it's just, his life is around that. And I'm just like, man, like, I don't know. I would just accept another 3 to 4%. And again, also, we've talked about this on the other podcast, but I also think for a lot of people, it just looks better anyway. Like, you're bigger you look bigger in clothes, which is how 99% of people see you. So to me, it just genuinely doesn't seem worth it.
Most people prefer it. It's just on social media when you have your shirt off and stuff like that. But it's true. If you're having to worry about food substitutions and it's constantly occupying your mind, so you have to buy diet sodas, you can only have popcorn instead of like whole grain pasta because there's like a few hundred calorie differences.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
You can't put even a drop of oil on your food. Like, everything's got to be so dialed in. Like, sure, you can do that and you'll be satisfied hunger wise, but mentally you're miserable and you're constantly thinking about food. And when you go out, that's the first thing that's going to be on your mind.
Yeah. It's exactly like you said. It's like, oh, this, I'm going to have this over this, because like, he would make like the protein ice cream, but you can't have almond milk over water because that's like 30 calories. And I'm it's kind of nuts.
Yeah. Like, anyone can maintain I would say pretty much any man can maintain 10% body fat under the right circumstances. It's just that those circumstances are really going to suck for almost everyone.
Yeah.
It's probably, I would say maybe like 1% of the population could genuinely be 10%, not is 10%, but could genuinely be 10% and be like, yeah, I actually feel fine. Like, I don't know what the fuss is about, but like, everyone can do it. It's just, is it worth it? I think that's, it's just, people need to think logically. And I think when people get influenced by these damn influencers, it's what they do, right? They influence, and then, you know, they're driven to these illogical, irrational decisions. And, you know, they don't really see that this body fat percentage is destroying their lives. And I've been there, right? Like 2019, I would say I maintained 10, 11% for 7 or 8 months. Like, partly because I was broke and I couldn't like afford to bulk, but like also just, you know, to take pictures for my book, my first book. And it was like, I forgot to take some pictures, so I had to stay lean for another week. And then I forgot some more pictures, so I had to stay lean for another week.
Oh.
And so, yeah, eventually I was just like, screw it. And I gained probably 5 kilos in a week or something.
Okay.
So you can fight it and maintain it, but like, is it worth it? Probably not.
Yeah, is it worth it on any extreme? Like, what are you willing to do to get down or up to these levels? Because I can even say, let's all bloat max to 400 pounds and have elite powerlifting totals. And you know what? I bet if most natties did that and trained hard, they'd be pretty darn strong, but their health is going to go to hell. It's the same thing if you get shredded. It's not the best state to be in. And even people don't know this about myself, but I used to be a naturally skinny guy. Had abs growing up, not a problem. And my natural set point is about 12%. I can maintain that year round, no problems. Yet people know me as the bear mode guy. Why? Because I want gains. If that means gaining 8% body fat on top of my natural set point, so the highest extremity of that, let's freaking go. And the times that I haven't done that, it never works out. Like 2018, 2019, made no gains whatsoever in my arms. I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, you're making me want to bulk up. It's I'm also glad that I didn't shave before this. I would have been the least manly here. So I'm glad I kept this going. So I was going to bring up one point, Jeff, you had said about earlier in the podcast, you said how, you know, fat loss is easier than muscle growth. And then here, but you were talking about how most people can't maintain 10%. And it's an interesting point of like, is it easier to bulk or cut? And this was actually going back to Professor X, a somewhat disagreement I had with him at the time. But I grew up, you know, fat. So then I wanted to be lean. That's all I wanted. So all this time was spent dieting. And to me, with my huge appetite at the time, like I had a voracious appetite, it was like cutting was so much harder in the moment. But now, you know, lifting for 18 years, I do understand his point. And I'd actually say it's fairly straightforward. I would say for most people, the process of dieting is harder than the process of bulking. I mean, the day-to-day, the hunger, the added cardio, things like that. However, like physiologically, to lose fat is much faster and more straightforward than to gain muscle, right? And one argument that I'd always say about like, you know, people who take performance enhancing drugs and whatnot, it's like, okay, and you said this before, anybody can be 10% body fat. Anybody can really be 8% body fat, meaning like it is physiologically possible. It's just going to suck. Whereas it's like, well, my goal physique of like 20 pounds more muscle or whatever, just actually cannot be done without performance enhancing drugs, right? Like there's this level you just can't get to. So I guess it depends on like whether it's easier or harder, depends on how fast is that process versus what's actually even possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the duration needs to be factored in. Like if you're trying to gain 20 pounds of muscle, that's going to take you years. But losing 20 pounds of fat can be done on a moderate deficit, 3 months, no problem. Or in general, you can even do, you know, a crash diet. As long as, I don't recommend that, but you'll lose fat real quick. And you have plenty of shredded, skinny guys out there. They just have to have the discipline, or if you have a small appetite, no problem. So you dial things back with the food, you do your cardio. It's really not a big deal. You know, it's guys who struggle to gain weight and put on muscle, get stronger, because that's where you have to force yourself in the gym. You have all this extra recovery. You're sleeping a lot. Everything is hyper optimized. So if you're not making gains, that says that you're not doing what's required in the gym. So one requires physical exertion in the sense that you're really pushing the envelope of intensity to gain this muscle, and it's going to require a long-term sacrifice. The other is just paying attention to some numbers on a phone app, or, you know, not eating as much. It's very basic comparison-wise.
Right.
Like what's harder, dieting or programming?
Yeah, I think it depends on the level too, right? Like I think at any of our level, you have to get a lot more meticulous with the programming to gain muscle, right? I think, but if you were to ask, like for Gen Pop, right? They come into you, they haven't been in the gym, and you say, well, what's going to be harder? I want to lose 10 pounds of fat or 10 pounds of muscle. I think most like gen pop have a very hard time staying in a deficit for a long time, right? And the ones who do it have a really poor rate of success as far as maintaining that fat loss, right? When most people just inherently would think, oh, I have just to gain weight, like gaining weight is easy. But of course, gaining muscle over a sustained period of time is not, because you have to continuously be dialed in. So both obviously are hard. I think it's just, like you said, the rate factors in and how long you're at it factors in.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're all like fairly advanced lifters. So for us, like every pound of muscle.
Yeah, we're biased. Precious,
yeah, it's like, oh, wow. Like a pound of muscle, that is glorious. It is something that we really have to put, you know, 100 hours or something into the gym to get, potentially. And then when people are like, you know, 15 years in, I mean, that could be a whole year. That could be 400 or 500 hours in the gym. And so compared to a pound of fat loss,
right?
I mean, you could do that in a few days, right? It's not. Yeah. So I think it depends on your perspective. Yeah. And totally. Yeah, gen pop, like muscle growth is still, I would still say it's more challenging, but then yeah, you have the whole environmental thing and the whole sort of quote unquote relationship with food, et cetera.
Yeah.
It does depend. I don't want to like cheapen fat loss or say it's like super easy, because a lot of people do struggle with it. But I would say for the type of people listening to us, muscle growth is probably overall more challenging.
If you listen to this podcast, then that's likely the case.
Yeah, ahead, it depends, Alex, where you are in your lifting journey. You know, like most people are, let's keep it real, weak and small. So gaining muscle is where they struggle. This is provable by looking at many polls. So yeah. I think that's their actual problem. And that's why this obsession with diet videos, I think, is not the right way to go. Unless you give them basic advice like bulk up if you're too skinny. But
yeah,
most people need to, you know, gain weight, gain muscle, instead of hyper-specialize on the lean side of things, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you made a point earlier, Alex, that like, you know, a lot of these people, like, they change what their advice is later on, right? And they'll say like, oh, well, I didn't need to bulk up. But I'm like, I don't even know if I can think of impressive natural lifters who did not have some period of bulking up, right? Almost everybody's like, oh, you know, I just maintain this year round, is enhanced. But pretty much everybody has had bulked up periods who's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they will be enhanced and smaller than they used to be. So they used to be like an open bodybuilder, and then now they're like,
yes,
20
yes.
or 30 pounds below where they used to be or something. And so, you know, of course their advice is going to be radically different from someone who's a beginner, and like, you know, maybe they're really beat up from powerlifting, or just, you know, they have different goals, or more now they're more like longevity focused or something, you know, and their advice just doesn't carry over to that skinny beginner, because they're two totally different people.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people just forget, like sometimes it's maybe like marketing or malicious, but I think sometimes people, they genuinely just forget how they build their physique, right? Especially if they went enhanced halfway through. Like it's almost like, I don't want to say steroids makes, you know, people stupid or anything, but it's almost like the slate gets wiped clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it so many times where they just like completely ignore how they build their physique naturally. And it's like to the point where it's weird, and they forget that, you know, 98 or 99% of the people watching them are natural, and their advice is like from what they've been doing on the enhanced side of things, which I always like. And the thing is, like, they're very rarely called out on it too. And the difference is pretty profound as well.
I guess they're not called out on it because they're honest about their usage. They're real, and they don't have malicious intent, as you said. In most cases, they tend to be pretty genuine. But the problem is they forgot. They've been on roids for so long, or they got on early, that mm-hmm. they genuinely don't know how to help a natty who's really struggling with particular plateaus. Like if someone trained for 3 years, put on a good amount of muscle mass, and then has been on PDs for the last 7 years, I'm sorry, your perspective is going to be a little bit skewed.
Yeah. Yeah. I talk about this a lot. I don't do like call out videos or anything like that, but I just, in like a group chat with Abel Chabai and Brian Borson, we talk about it a lot, where it's just like, man, it like you said, they either forget where they actually believe this is what would have happened if they were natural. Like, there you guys, Jerry Ward, he passed away recently, but I was watching Jerry Ward, you know, long time ago. And he was like 20 pounds more muscular than when he was natural. And, you know, he had bulked up a minute. He had used everything under the sun, you know, not just anabolic steroids, but insulin and growth hormone, and even like follistatin and things like that, like myostatin inhibitors. And so allegedly, you know, who knows what they really were when you're buying from underground labs, but so he had bulked up a ton. And now he's sitting here like on TRT, 20 pounds heavier. And he's like, you don't think I could have gained 1 pound naturally per year over the last 20 years? I'm like, basically he was trying to say that he had netted nothing from like over a decade of use. And I'm like, no, I don't think you could have continued to gain 1 pound of muscle for 20 years after you'd already been lifting naturally for 15 years. Like, it was just, to me, so many of these people, and this is the issue I have with like other people, like, again, like John Meadows, I think was one of the guys who could kind of integrate good advice for naturals and enhanced, but he was also enhanced for like 20 years. You know, Mike Isherchel, I think it's the same problem. It's like, yeah, like you're making good progress, but, and again, I don't think it's ever malicious. I think, I mean, sometimes, but not in these specific instances. I just think they genuinely do not know what would have happened naturally. And I would love like a simulation to see these guys who were forced to be natural, how different their advice would be compared to now. You know, like you got a 40-year-old natural Mike Isratel versus enhanced. How much would they debate each other, you know?
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
No, I 100% agree. It would have to be different because your training changes the longer you stay in this natural game. And even what movements you react to, the rate of progress, there's so many little intricacies that you won't understand until you get in the trenches. Like, even after you've been at this for years, like year 5 versus 7 requires different training modalities. You know, your advice will constantly be different, and you can pinpoint exactly work for you at any given time because the muscle gain is slow. So if you introduce a new movement that you've never done over the last 10 years and now you're seeing rapid growth, well, there's something to be said there. So it's very easy to isolate the variables, whereas if you're just upping the dose or just having a nice general reaction, it's harder to give very specific advice on the details. And oftentimes that's what you need when you are an elite natural.
Yeah, I think I tagged you guys in the Alberto Nunez post recently.
I was gonna mention that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so true. I mean, this is why people have said to me, like, oh, try, people wanted me to try, what's the supplement that just got called out recently? Greg Doucette sells it.
Dorkestrone.
Yeah, yeah. Because they're like, well, if it works, like, it's because of that supplement, which I'm not gonna take something I don't really know that much about. But I agree with that. I mean, he made the exact quote was basically saying like a natural bodybuilder is like the perfect canvas, an advanced natural bodybuilder to try things out. And I strongly feel people don't experiment enough, or they're trying things at a stage, either beginning lifting or when they're on anabolics, where how are you going to know? Like, that was why I did the training with Steve Hall. And I think Steve Hall is a great coach, just for the record, but I didn't really progress in that time. But imagine if I had started anabolics when I started coaching with him, and it's like, wow, this whole like ramping volume and like these movements are amazing.
Exactly.
And again, it's never, I think, malicious, but people get clouded because what they're doing is working, and it's very hard to separate out what is working when you have this giant stimulus.
It reminds me of like general strength versus specificity. When you're a novice, for example, everything works, and you can make the argument that, oh, my overhead press is giving me one-to-one carryover to my bench, and it's the greatest movement ever. And you milk that for a year or two and everything's amazing. But then by year 3 or 4, all of a sudden it stops getting carryover. But if that's all you know, you're coming from that limited time frame, then you're going to suggest that to everybody for the rest of your lifting journey, when the time itself is the X factor. So some things won't work for you later on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things where the past year and a half that I've made really, really good progress, that alone kind of informs me that I wasn't as advanced as I thought, right? Because if you're able to put on like visible progress and visible muscle in a year, to the point where like a lot of people are saying, wow, like what did you do? What did you change? Like your programming, et cetera. that's kind of a sign that, like, in that asymptote, you know, in that that diminishing returns curve, like, you weren't as far along as you thought. And so, you know, a lot of people are not as advanced as they thought, because I'd been training for 7 years, and you would think, like, based on the diminishing returns, oh, I'd gain like a pound or two or something like that. You know, we've all seen those charts,
yeah,
where it's like year one, this month, year two, and like it goes down and down and down. It gets cut in half each year or something. But that didn't hold true, because I wasn't as advanced as I thought, because there were a few years where I wasted them. And so, mm-hmm. you know, because I had a few years where they, you know, staying too lean, or, you know, sleep wasn't good, or, you know, I didn't have a gym membership because I couldn't afford it. So I was doing like only dips and pull-ups in the park, like just random stuff like that. I, you know, the curve was not as good as it could have been earlier. And so I can make up for it later. So, and, you know, I think some people, they think they're plateaued, but they actually could be not plateaued if they change some things. And the diet is going to be the biggest one there, just eating enough. Like, there are some people who, they generally think they're at their limit, but it's just because they're at their like 12% body fat limit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They could actually better progress.
I think everybody screwed up, no matter how good you are in this lifting game. You didn't do everything perfect from day one, unless you were personally like supervised by the best coach in the world for years at a time. And every little variable was monitored, which is not everybody. So I would like, I get comments, if you can do it all over again, you think you could have had your physique and strength in a faster amount of time? And my response is 100% yes, because we screwed up big time. And it just goes to show that what we label as intermediate and advanced, usually you're not, you know, like there's one guy, he I forget his name, but he says that most lifters who claim they're advanced are actually intermediates. And now that I've been at this for a long time, I'd actually agree with that statement, because if you look at the rate of progress, it's not as slow as they claim once they actually dial things properly.
Yeah, that's a huge caveat that, you know, assuming it's dialed in, because Candido had a point, this was like back, I read this years back, but he was saying, you know, some people talk about, okay, what are advanced versus intermediate versus beginner numbers? And I think that's obviously flawed, because some people just have such dramatic differences in what they can achieve, right?
Themselves, yeah.
But he was talking about like, yeah. And he was saying he pretty much exclusively factors in their rate of progress. And as you guys both alluded to, I think the only thing you'd have to put in there is their rate of progress, assuming they are doing things mostly correct, right? Obviously, plenty of people have no progress. You wouldn't call them an advanced lifter just because they're not doing things correctly. But yeah, assuming you are doing things correctly, I think that's pretty much the determining factor in how advanced you are. And you could have somebody who is advanced, who's just maxed out at like a 300 bench press, and somebody else could be an intermediate hitting 405, yeah. Right? I mean, it absolutely happens.
100%.
I mean, that's you and I both know Toby, right? Toby Adler. And I mean, dude, he was like a sophomore in college deadlifting over 600 pounds. I mean, he was not advanced in that he was maxed out, right? But he was just freaky strong.
Yeah. And some people, like when you look at general intermediate standards, they won't even hit that following basic linear progression. They can be below that amount, and that's all they're going to milk off that. So they're actually intermediates, yet they might be benching a little bit less than 185. Mm. And that's okay, you know? It just means you have to adjust your programming accordingly.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. So how much, we, you know, I just put out that genetics video, and I would say that's the most effort I put into a video, because I wanted to make sure it was done right, and I knew I was going to reference it in the future. And I was glad to see it as well received. Did you guys, would you say you completely agreed? Were there things you guys disagreed with it? Any like pushback on certain points?
Well, there was one thing that you said that I liked. Well, first, there's a lot to say here, but I didn't know you struggled that much to build your physique, because I look at you now and I'm like, God damn, you've put on a lot of muscle mass. And like just seeing year after year, barely gaining any muscle, mm-hmm. you know, not even looking like you lifted in some cases.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Disheartening for sure.
Man, but, and you said that you didn't know that there were other people like yourself who were this obsessed about training hard, and you thought you were the only one. But then you came out in the online fitness world and you saw all these nut jobs who were passionate like you. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, man, it's the community. Because again, like, not that I didn't have friends who lifted, but it was just, some of them got as involved as I did for brief periods, right? But it was very rare. I met anybody who put it, I mean, I, cause it, you know, we talked before about with the food thing, it's like, there's what you're doing, but there's also how much you're thinking about it. And so I knew not to train 7 days a week, twice a day. So I was training 4 or 5 days a week. I was eating 6 or 7 meals a day, but the thoughts, I mean, just constant thoughts. I eventually created a journal. So I have training journals back to 2005 or six, because I thought about it so much. I was like, I need to put this on paper because it's never going to just stop revolving. It was just very obsessive. And so in like the online space, certainly there's more people like me. I'd still say not everybody's that obsessed, but that's what would bother me when I'd see these comments of like, oh, this person is clearly knows what they're doing or clearly trained so hard because they look like this. And it's like, well, I know I'm doing a lot and I'm doing everything I can. And I don't look anything like this person. So I have a strong bias towards believing genetics and other things factor in a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Cause you said like natural hypertrophy weighs like 210 and you were like 190.
Yeah.
And he says, I have average genetics, but then you say, well, if I'm average, then how come there's a 20-pound difference? So his statement can be true if we're both average. Like one of us obviously has to have slightly better genetics if we're the same height and have been training for a similar time and whatnot, right?
Yep.
So that
yeah, that's what. Yeah, and I mean, I've been training a lot longer than him, really. And again, it's not, you know, not to hate on him at all. It's more just a comment that like something I heard him say, and I hear a lot of people say, and I mentioned this in videos. People are like, "Well, sure, there's those freak athletes out there, but the rest of us," and I'm like, no, it's not like there's this and then there's everybody else, right? There's people along this entire bell curve, right? You know, and like I would look at Jeff's response to lifting, and I would say Jeff clearly has better genetics for muscle growth than I do, that he's got more muscle than I do now after, you know, let's say 8 years of lifting, right? But I wouldn't say, and that's when I try to, because I have the same bias everybody else does, right? Or if I've done this, and like even as a trainer, like would I want a trainer who has 20 pounds less muscle than me, right? Like probably not. Like I have to logically stop myself and say, well, that doesn't mean they don't know what they're doing. But yeah. I think, you know, you want a financial advisor who has more money than you, right? You want a trainer who's bigger than you, et cetera. And again, we can break that bias if we stop and think about it, but that's inherently there. But I have to realize, well, I don't have 10th percentile genetics, right? There's somebody out there who could actually try as hard as I have and be a lot smaller. It's just due to, you know, there's obviously a strong dropout rate for people who don't respond well. So there's that whole bias as well.
Yeah. For me, it's like, there are two main things. The first one is that, like, let's say you meet someone and they're like the same height, they've been training the same amount of time, and they're like 20 pounds of muscle more than you. It's really only two things that could be that. It's either the process, which is the training and, you know, the diet, the sleep, et cetera, whatever, the stress, or it's the genetics. And both of those are kind of like tough pills for people to swallow sometimes. And some people swallow the genetics pill really easily. Or I guess it could be the steroid pill as well, right? Yeah. That's another one where people say, anyone bigger than me is on steroids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's either steroids or it's the training process and diet recovery, et cetera. Or they just have better genetics than you. And I've had people DM me for the body fat analysis that I offered thing, which I don't do anymore. Please don't DM me. I've done like 1,000. I know. But one guy was like, I got a few people send me pictures, and I'm like, so you've been training like 7, 8, 9 years? And they're like, nah, a year. And I'm like, what the, like they're about my size. Wow. And I expected them to be training like about as long as I have. And they're like, nah, just a year. Like my coach wrote me this program. I'm like, what the, like, it just blew my mind. And that's when people look at me and they're like, you're a freak or something. I'm like, nah, well, you know, I'm clearly, you know, pretty far above average. But like, when you see someone like that, like, even if you're smashing the process in a year, and they almost certainly did, to get those kind of results that quickly, like, I mean, maybe it could have been anabolics, but like, I could just tell from how they were speaking, like, that I'm pretty sure they were natural and just like just ridiculous genetics. And then the other thing was that I think strength and size are a little bit less correlated than sometimes people think. Because in one of your pictures, you were like, I just did incline 100 kilos for like seven reps or something.
Yeah.
And I just did that on I actually got 9 reps with 225 on flat bench.
Yeah.
So, I would say incline is better. So your performance is better than mine, but you were like clearly not as developed at that
time. Slightly smaller than you, right?
Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't add up because, you know, there's a lot more factors that go into strength and size than just like lift this, look this way. And like, I put out sort of natural standards for hypertrophy videos before, and I don't regret it, but people have to realize like, it's just super general. And just because you lift a certain amount of weight, even if it's for reps, like there's a lot more factors that go into how you're going to look than just like hitting a certain number.
Yeah. Leverages is going to be the big one. If you have super long arms, you might not need a 3-plate bench to have a massive chest. Just even getting 250, you're going to have some pounds popping out, but it doesn't mean that your pec tissue is weak. It's just that you're not built to bench, you know, but the correlation is there. I would say though, that we have to look at it as it pertains to the individual, not lift this amount and you're going to have X amount of inches, because that give these guidelines. It's just to give people a base, and because the majority is weak, it tends to be favorable in that way. But all we really have is our own rate of progression to compare it to. Like if someone has a 500 pound squat with chicken legs, well, they may need to get a 600 in that case for them, because they have really bad quad genetics, you know, or just switch another movement. If someone is already elite and they, you know, they have like, let's say a 2-plate overhead press. Well, if they get it to 250, they're probably going to have a lot bigger shoulders. But now the person already paid their dues. They're already really strong. So any amount of strength that they do acquire is going to be rather proportional. But if you're just starting off, or you're the mid stage of this, we can't just throw out random numbers out here, because it just doesn't correlate. It doesn't cause anything, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, like you said, it's all relative to the individual. Cause even though I had that video saying, well, hey, I was doing these lifts and I wasn't, you know, this size, for me, I have always gotten bigger when I've gotten stronger, and vice versa. You know, like for the most part, I mean, I've had some exceptions. I think Jeff, you and I talked about this, where all of my neck growth from direct neck training happened in the first year, even though I got stronger, it for whatever reason, it seemed to plateau. Maybe I changed technique, although it's a pretty basic movement, so I don't know how much I could have changed it. But I guess I've had some examples where I've gotten stronger and not gotten much bigger. Again, sometimes that's like a form thing. I've almost never gotten bigger and not been stronger. Like I can look back, I remember realizing this in college, and I was like, oh, my arms are the exact same size. Lo and behold, I'm curling and extending the same weights, right? It's so within a person, especially naturals, again, once you throw enhancement there, I've absolutely seen people who are using much lighter weights and whatnot. Although again, they probably could generate more force. They're just not doing it. But for naturals, I mean, pretty much within the individual, a direct correlation.
I have never gotten weaker and bigger. Not once.
Right.
Yeah.
And those who claim that they have, by the way, it's usually because they're far from a peak state. It's very temporary. You know, so if they ran some hypertrophy blocks, they haven't been doing high percentages or training specific compound movements. If they then come out with a video saying, oh, I got weaker, but look how much more muscular I am. No, you didn't. If you run a strength program for 1 to 3 months, you're going to be way stronger than you were previously. So the tissue is there, the force capacity, the potential, it's all there. You just got to display it, you know? So even in that case, you're never getting weaker and putting on lean muscle tissue at the same time. I just don't see it.
Same. One of the points I had wrapped up in that video was just to say, like, you know, if we can't change it, which, you know, as of now we can't, why focus on it? And I would say, you know, it's nice when I talk to guys like you, because you guys are aware that, like, yes, it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of things, but genetics are a huge factor. So there's no like disagreement there in the importance of it. But if I think of like the financial or business world equivalent of what we see on YouTube, it would be like, you know, imagine you start this job and every year, like you're ranking up and you make, you know, you made 50,000, then you made 70,000 and whatever. Now you're making 100,000. And then like the owner's son comes in and is given this position, and he's actually working really hard, but he started at 200,000 and the next year he was making 300,000. So now he's going on book tours and he's talking about how his hard work led to 300,000. It's like, I know you work hard, but you were also given this job right through your parents.
Exactly.
And you're now talking about all this stuff that you're doing and how you're so successful when I've worked my ass to get like, you know, rank up in this company. And I started almost below where you are. And it's like, you know, that person works hard, but anybody who could imagine themselves in that situation could imagine how frustrating it would be to see their hard work just kind of diminished. And I think that's what you see on YouTube where it's like, you know, the best looking, most naturally jacked person is going to have oftentimes the best, like the biggest following and, you know, the praise. And it's like, well, I think any rational human, unless you're just like monk status, is probably going to find that a little frustrating at times, you know?
Yeah. I think you have to keep your ego in check and always try to be relatable to your audience. Not that you're some god who's above them, you know, you're so much stronger and bigger that like, if they say, oh, I just benched 250 and you're a 405 bench, you're like, oh, okay. Like you should be congratulating them. Yeah. That's impressive. Good job, man. Yeah. You know, because even elite naturals forget that they've been at this for, because they've been grinding for so many years that they don't realize, like, at one point your warm-up weight used to be a one rep max and someone, that's their goal, you know? So you got to factor that in.
Do you guys remember the first time you benched 135?
I think so.
Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it was my sophomore year. I was doing Bill Starr's 5x5.
And oh, yes.
I specifically remember because I was never somebody who tried to go for one rep max. Like, first time I hit 405 deadlift, it was a 405 for six. You know, it wasn't like a one rep max. It was supposed to be five. I did let my ego get to me because my college bros were watching me, but it was supposed to be for five. And first time I did 135, it was Bill Starr's. It was like, well, this is just the next week's progression. But like, there's a few key lifts. You know, I think we probably have all had those moments where like, I will always remember hitting this thing, right? And like, it's just a whatever that is for the person, but these milestones.
Yeah, I guess it depends on their athletic background, what they did beforehand. Like if you started with calisthenics and then you come in and you're benching over 135, it's not going to mean much to you.
Yeah,
but
if maybe 225 in that case.
Yeah, exactly. You'll, whatever that arbitrary number was, you'll remember it, you know? But if you were at an empty bar, that's going to hit different when you get a plate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or in general, when you have bad leverages for something or below average genetics per se, when you overcome it, wow, does it feel good?
Yeah.
And that's why it can be frustrating when you see those who acquired these muscle gains very easily and they're talking about how they're average, but you know that they're not because you're the one who actually struggled. So I get where you're coming from on that. It's like me watching some guy saying, oh yeah, I got these 18-inch arms and this is the method. And I'm like, bro, I don't have 18s and I've been grinding my ass off for over 10 years. And I think it's going to take me another 10 to even get there. So some of these processes are not effortless, you know, and even though some of these people have good intentions, they really got to check themselves. Like I said before.
So you hit 17-inch arms recently, right? That was like, I saw that measurement.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Cold That's flex. Great. Thank you.
And Jeff, you were, where are you at now? 17 and a half?
18 and a quarter.
Oh, shit. Then,
my God.
Yeah. And then 17 and three quarters.
Oh, my God.
They're somewhat fluffy. But it's weird how some things just come relatively easily and then others, like, I don't remember how long exactly it took me to bench one plate, but it was probably 4 or 5 months into lifting. And then, like, I think two plates wasn't until 4 or 5 years. And I hit a close grip before I hit it, like, with a normal ass grip.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, that probably has something to do with the triceps. But other things, just, you know, the arms grow more easily compared to, you know, bench or squat or deadlift. And so, you know, I try to check my biases and take that into account. And I guess it makes my strength levels more relatable to the average person.
Right, right.
If nothing else.
Yeah, I'm looking back at my old records here. So I had, it looks like the heaviest I was 218.8. I think I saw 221 day, just maybe didn't write it down. But arms were 17 and 7/16. So like basically 17 and a half. That's the biggest they were ever. So nice. You got me beat, Jeff. Congrats.
Yeah, you both got me beat.
Well, yeah, I'd say like proportionally with the very long arms, though, I think as far as how big they look, you definitely got me beat, Alex. So what did you do anything differently to get past any sticking points to get to 17, or was it kind of just a time thing?
Oh, no, this I see. That's what's so fun about being natty and documenting the journey. You know exactly what caused the gains, just like we saw with Jeff in his 1 year video on how he acquired an inch, right? It was the same thing for me. Got to focus on that long head and do direct bicep work. For a long time, the YouTube fitness space was saturated with powerlifters who were giving hypertrophy advice. And a lot of us tried it out because everyone, like the alternative was garbage. It was bodybuilders who were roided up to the max, no great information. It just so happened that the powerlifters were natty. Of course, some of them had really good genetics as well, but I digress. Some of them were actually, majority were suggesting, just raise your closer bench and you'll have massive arms. That's all you have to do. Isolation work is overrated. The compound movements are everything. And guys like myself fell for that trap. Ended up doing that for years and years and seeing no gains in my triceps. It went straight to my shoulders and pecs, you know, because I'm torso dominant. And then the calisthenics world, we had guys saying, just focus on weighted chins. You don't have to do curls. Look at this EMG study. Chin-ups have the highest bicep activation, which are also flawed, by the way. I went through that as well, acquiring elite numbers in both lifts. Arms were my worst body part. So that's when I realized this advice is garbage, you know, if you are someone like me or you're an average person, I would suggest. And I started isolating, you know, long head pushdowns, overhead extensions, a lot of curls. Lo and behold, the arms came up. Is that a coincidence that if you isolate your lagging body part, they blow up in size? I wonder.
Yeah, right.
And then the calorie surplus, it took two bulks to gain an inch. So this was over a 2 year time frame, technically.
So when you were at 16 inches, what was your weight?
Like 165, 167.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of like at the same weight, how much, or even not really weight, body fat percentage. Like, you know, like,
realistically, I probably gained half an inch of lean tissue.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have 17 lean inch arms. That's not. No.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. I just, in general, anytime somebody makes comparisons, because, and this could be with, you know, a weight of muscle gained or certain lifts, not to diminish the progress made, but just like for me, like I'll look at, okay, last time I was this weight or last time I was this body fat percentage, is there progress, you know, et cetera. So, because like you said, we could all be 400 pounds. And
exactly. Well, in my case, I can base that off my previous bulk where I was actually fluffier, but my arm was 16 and a half. So that's how I know I acquired lean gains. Cause if there's more definition and you can see the veins still, then, you know, it's not, that's the only explanation, right? Unless somehow my fat distribution changed, which I don't think is
unlikely. A thing. Yeah. Yeah. So Jeff, you naturally had pretty big arms, but in terms of like the response to it, I should say. So were you just kind of from day one doing standard bodybuilding arm training, or was it changing?
My first few years of training, I actually lost my training logs. Remember my first year, I was doing like 3 to 4 days a week, mostly compound movements. But I don't think my training was great, but I did eat enough, which I think helped a lot. Year 2 to 3 to 4, I also don't have measurements from back then. It wasn't a consistency issue or an effort issue. Like, I've always trained hard, but definitely in terms of like programming, I didn't have a program. I didn't have something written out or something I was following, or like starting strength or 5-3-1 or anything like that. It was, for a lot of it, it was kind of just like show up and move things around.
Yeah.
Like this is like, oh, there's a bench press. Like I knew about bench press. And then like year 5, 6, 7, I started getting into it a lot more and started reading a lot more. But I still didn't have like a very fixed program or structure. It was more like I would read something, I would read about a lift and then just do that lift a lot until I got sick of it. And then I would find another lift that like I was obsessed with. And so, you know, some days I would be doing the same lift every single day for a week. Like I remember one time I deadlifted like 100,000 kilos in a week or something, just because like that was the week of deadlift. Like I did German volume training every day for deadlifts. And like, okay. Yeah, it was dumb, right? But like, it was fun as well. So
yeah,
builds character.
So a lot of dumb stuff.
I've not done screen share on here before. Let me try this. So okay. So can you guys see this Word document here?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is 2006. So I'm like 15 years old here. So this was like where the journey started. I was never shown people this before. But you can see 130 pounds and right. And Body for Life was the thing that really got me hooked. Like I was like kind of like casually lifting before that, but this was like when I like got really obsessed with it. But you can see, I mean, literally like every single week, like I'd have sign up, like I was always very analytical and wow. Obsessive. So this is just everything I would put in there, weight, this little note here, what the fuck is this even possible? Like, but this just goes and goes and wow. Goes and goes, everything I had. So, I mean, this is like 15-year-old me, just numbers and 4.7896.5625 pounds of fat. Like, obviously I knew that wasn't literally accurate, but like, I just had to have the numbers there. So if you want a glimpse as to like how my mind works, this is one of, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of documents I have. So it gets pretty obsessive in my brain.
I was pretty similar.
Yeah.
I was similar in the analytical side of things, but the training wasn't orderly. Like my mind wanted to organize everything, but when I got there, it would just be like, oh, look, like this is cool. This is interesting. Let's do some curls. Oh, Zottman curls. That's what's up. Like that's the new thing. But I would manage and track it and measure it along with the calories and the weight gain and the macros and everything. And the sets, like I would manage everything and track everything very, very rigidly and you know, in a very controlled way, but it didn't really help because I wasn't actually like following the progression, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I used to have a logbook that I would bring every time I went to the gym, and I used it for at least 2 years. I had all my PRs documented, like literally everything written down. And I wish I could find it to show my viewers, but it's similar to what you did, but in a training aspect. It wasn't like body measurements and stuff like that. And I find when everything is tracked and you look back, it really blows your mind. And I find even the process itself, it makes you more likely to make progress because there's no excuses. You know, you look at your numbers, for example, and you know you got to do a little bit better because sometimes we also forget what those stats were, you know? Yeah. So by keeping track of it, it ensures that you're going to keep leveling up.
Well, this is why I love what both of you guys do in terms of tracking. You know, as I've mentioned you specifically, Jeff, a few times, and I see Alex that you do it as well. But to me, it's like, I understand the bodybuilders who say, it doesn't matter what my measurements are on stage and things like that. Like, I of course understand that, but it's also like, wouldn't you want to know that you're actually making progress? Because when it comes to things like bodybuilding, fighting, you know, where so much of it is who shows up on that day and not your actual progress. It's like, we talk all the time about, you have to measure yourself against you. Well, it's like, okay, so your placing sure is going to depend on how you look and who else shows up. But I would want to know, okay, am I almost like fooling myself or did this really work? And exactly. It's like, explain to me, if you're telling me that you're making progress every year and you've been doing this for 20 years, but if your arms haven't gotten, or you know, your muscular measurements haven't gotten any bigger, your strength hasn't gone up at all, your waistline hasn't gone down at all, then how are you going to tell me that you've really progressed? You know, is it because you just, you know, got grainier, quote unquote? Like, what does that mean? You know, and so I like that you guys track these things because you have to be honest with yourself. You know, it's like, it's not to be disheartening, but I don't want to be that guy kidding himself that what I'm doing is working if it's not. You know, if I'm never going to progress again, maybe I accept it and do something else, or I try other things and see if I can eke out something.
Yeah, a lot of people are lying to themselves. They're in this state of delusion and it's not doing them any favors because they're probably leaving gains on the table. Like you said, making excuses. Oh, I'm grainier. Really? Like if you recomp, I can understand. Like you did a natural hypertrophy style, you weigh the same and you measure. And like if you lost body fat and your measurements stayed the same, I would say you probably gained muscle. That's a fair assessment. But if not, you're just kidding yourself, you know?
Yeah. So you said, Alex, you know, if you could you have gotten here faster if you knew what you know now, right? And I think for almost everybody, that is the case, right? Even I said in my video, from day one, I was doing things properly and like better than most people, but it doesn't mean I wouldn't change anything, right? So I think as a good wrap up, why don't we each say a few like key things we would have changed if we had to start all over?
Oh, there's a lot to say there, but I would say my current physique, which I'm getting a lot of great feedback on, I probably could have had it in 2019. And I know that sounds insane because that's a 3-year gap, but I'm not exaggerating when I say that people screw things up early on, like novice from to late intermediate to advanced, like there's always something that could have been better. And in my case, it was running minimalist programs for far too long. Even you can argue going through bulks and cuts in the sense that if you never did the cut, your muscle gains would have been a lot higher. Of course, you'd be much fatter at the same time, but that adds up. So if you're cutting 6 months out of the year and you do that every year, or a three month cut every year, after 10 years, that's something. That's muscle gains that you didn't capitalize on. So in a perfect world, we would all be perma bulking, which I'm not going to recommend because then your body fat would get too high. And you would have the optimal volume, exercise selection. You would know exactly what movements work for your build, which you don't know. That's the problem. But assuming you did, you'd save years for sure.
Yep.
That's why being an following the proper natties on YouTube is so helpful, because they made a lot of the mistakes so that you don't have to repeat what they did. And we're in the information age where there's been so much information that's been shared over the last decade that there's no reason why our progress would not be accelerated. There's good novice programs out there. There's paid programs. There's books. There's strength coaches that could help you out. Like, even if you are that novice, you've been training for 6 months, if you hire the right guy immediately, that's still going to save you time. So the way I see it, time is money, and also knowledge is key. But in terms of physiological processes, once things are dialed down, you're not going to get any faster results. It just means that you're getting the fastest results for you, like what you were supposed to get had it been that way in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
I actually wrote a whole section about this in my next book because there were so many things. I would say not changing the program too frequently. That's a big one. Not having excessive exercise variation. Like you see a new movement, you do that too much. You do it every day and then you switch and then you switch and then you switch. And it's like that fake progress that you did a post about where you're not actually making muscular gains. You're just like making those quick skill-based neurological gains that aren't really providing growth. I would say stop chasing numbers that aren't there. If a number is not there on that day, it's just not there. And like trying to hit the same number again and again and again isn't going to make it be there in most cases. I know there's like a video of Clarence Kennedy trying to snatch 186 kilos or something 15 times in a row. And he finally gets that. Olympic lifting, you know, that's a sort of a different animal.
A little different.
But like the 16th time trying a deadlift and you fail the first 15 times, it's just going to stay on the floor. Like, just give up, you know, do something else and come back next week, or don't max out that frequently. And so I would take a more long-term approach of building everything rather than just like being greedy and always trying to take things. And I think some people need a kick in the ass to just get progressive overload. But I was always the kind of type where I was too aggressive with that. And so I needed to be more patient. I needed to be not more consistent with days in the gym, but with my mentality and just stringing together good, solid, average, boring, moderate workouts, which are what actually drive progress. Nothing epic, nothing insane, you know, nothing where you're doing German volume training on deadlift and your hands are, you know, leaving marks on the bar because your calluses are all torn up and stuff. Like, those workouts aren't nearly as productive as the difficulty, you know, feels, right? And so you can put a lot of effort in, but if that effort is not directed in the right direction, you're not really going to go anywhere. And I would say that's the main thing, right? Like just because something is challenging and difficult and it feels like you did a lot, it doesn't mean you're actually going to be getting a lot out of it. And then, you know, there are some others like nutrition stuff and like stress management and sleep and stuff like that. But the main training thing was like, don't get too carried away. Just keep everything at like a moderate level and then just be reasonable with your training and then don't get greedy and then just let everything sort of build over time and just let that compound interest build up and then, you know, take you where you want to go.
That's a good point. That's all great. Yeah, that's in a new book you have coming out?
Yeah, it was just released last week.
Oh, okay, cool. And yeah, I would say for me, I'd say one is like lifestyle based and one is nutrition / training based. So the one that's not going to surprise anybody is less time dieting. And I did not excessively diet. I would usually just do a yearly bulk and cut. So it'd be 9 years bulking, 9 years. That'd be great. 9 months bulking and then 3 months dieting. However, I don't think I was wrong to think this way at 14, 15. I just didn't know. I wish I would have told myself like this whole shredded 130-pound physique is like not going to be the thing. Like this isn't it, you know, don't even diet at all in high school, literally just slowly gain over time. Cause there was so much just like natural puberty and things going on that like, there's no reason I should have had periods in high school where I was stagnating. You know what I mean? And again, I wasn't on a permacut or anything like that, but I literally would have told myself, and any high schooler listening, I unless you're actually like really overweight where it's a health issue, I just would not diet. Like I would just use, I mean, that is such a critical period to gain. And I really tying in with that. Again, thankfully I learned this in high school so that from college on, it was kind of resolved, but I lost out on a lot of social opportunities in high school. Like literally we'd be out, let's just like riding with like my brother and friends on a Friday night. And I didn't have a license yet. So I had to go to the gym at 5 a.m. with my dad on Saturday. And it's like, I'm proud of young me that I had the dedication to do that. But also it's like, damn, like you're 15, 16 years old, enjoy some time with your friends and have a life. Because, and again, I'm coming from such an extreme. A lot of people do need more dedication, but it was to a level where it was absolutely a net negative for my life at that point. And I think if you're so obsessed with it that it's all that you do, you're kind of like missing the point, right? We do this to make our lives better. Exactly. And I'm not to say use that as an excuse. You know, progress towards goals is a huge factor in positivity in one's life. But especially at that age, I would make sure to also have a life outside of lifting.
All great advice.
Cool. So, all right, guys. Well, like the first time, very much enjoyed the conversation. I'm sure we'll do another one in the future. Let's start with you, Alex. Where can we find more of your stuff?
You can find me on the Alpha Destiny YouTube channel or Alex Leonidas Official on Instagram.
Awesome. Jeff?
Jeffrey Verity Schofield on YouTube and Instagram. I should probably make a backup Instagram just in case, you know, they decide to ban me for no reason at all, which they seem to do. But I don't have one yet. And then Verity Fit for, you know, books and stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thanks again for having us on.